Talking Live with Peter Janetsky.
And tonight we're talking about affairs on the net, how people actually start out with quite innocent things and then end up in creating a dark, disastrous situation for their relationship. And it's not too late to share your story, 1-300-85-1314. Or you can SMS 0413096509 or questions at talkinglife.com. We've got Ellie on the phone. Hello, Ellie.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Pardon me?
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks. How are you yourself?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. What would you like to share?
This is like a year ago. I was having a friend. The one, the husband was lost a job and is in the computer all the time. Mm-hmm. And then it was rumors many years ago that he was a gay before they got married. Mm-hmm. And then they married. They have two children, 16 and 14. The husband lost a job, and then the wife, the one working hard, and then he's always home, and then end up with in the internet all the time and watching like a probably sexual program or something like that.
Yeah.
And the wife find out and can't put up with it, and then get fight and fight and fight and fight all the time. End up, she said to the husband, you better get out from the house right now. I can't take it anymore because you've got two boys. I don't want to see you doing that way all the time in the house. So when she called me in the middle of the night and I told her, look, it's only lonely people, only people who doesn't have anything to do in life. They are always go in the internet. If you are busy, even Facebook, I'm joining Facebook, but I don't do Facebook every minute. I don't open every minute. I don't open every day. Sometime only, just to catch up with a friend and say, hi, how are you? Or happy birthday, you know, something mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this, lot of lonely people in the world is the one is sitting in the computer all day and then end up, they're looking for something to get comfort for themselves.
Yep.
I'm watching a lot of young people too because I have 24 years old son and then 22 years old son. They are busy. I teach them 2 minutes at a time. Even my husband, I've been married for 27 years. And then I said to them, I'm very strong faith. I'm a very strong Christian. And I said to them, look, it's only people who love to get involved with the internet on the 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not into business, that this must be a lonely people looking for something and looking for trouble. And they couldn't realize they end up in deep trouble.
And I think they're not even aware sometimes that they're going to be looking for trouble. I think there's a lot of truth, Ellie, to the adage, you know, idle hands are the devil's playground.
I agree with you, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things is about if someone's actually becoming obsessive and spending lots of time, there's something wrong. And this is why we've talked in the past when we've talked about pornography, but we did a program, I've done it twice now, where we've had Dr. Mubarak Ali from Flinders University, who's been researching young people and the use of the internet, particularly in addictive gaming.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're spending 8-10 hours a day playing games. Well, you know, that's a waste of a life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And a lot of young people also like that. This is game and playing game. And basically, internet, it's just the people looking for comfort. They don't know what they're doing for themselves.
Yep. Yep.
And then there's a friend. I said to them, look, you have to forgive him and call him back. And I'm going to come down to visit you and to see our overseas friend. And I have to catch a plane to get them for 7 hours flying.
Yeah.
You go to see them, and I give them books, Driven Purpose Life, to him because yeah. He's a Christian too, business Christian. He's a nice guy, actually.
But he's a bit lost by losing his job. Hang on, Elliot.
Absolutely. He lost.
Yeah, yeah. Just like Carol.
When he like going to retire, when my husband going to retire, I'm follow him everywhere
yeah.
he's going.
Yep.
And I talk to him. He having lunch. I'm sitting down with him. He's in the garden. I'm doing with him. And a man's normally, when they are lost, they don't know where they're going. They really don't know what to do. And lost a job, they don't know what to do. So the wife should help him. So tell them talk and realize, not just busy to themselves, oh, I'm too busy to talk to him. No, you can't do that. Really, you've got to be talk all the time.
Ellie, it's Carol here. From what you're saying, I think that your friend and the partner need real help. This is a warning sign. It's a wake-up call. And I think that's the best advice you can give them. Forgiveness is important, but I think it's also about then a commitment to change and a commitment to do things differently. And from what you've said, he's lonely, and they need to look at that. What is it that's contributing to that within the relationship? And I think the point you made about the children is very valid, that the impact on children need to be considered. It's not just the partners. And many times in these situations, children are aware of a lot more than we think they are aware of. And that can be very destructive in their own relationships. And I have had to work with people who have been exposed to overt pornography as children, and that's been a contributory factor. So I think you need to tell your friends that this is a warning bell, and they need to seek professional help to deal with the issue.
Thanks for your call, Ellie. Talking Life, we're talking about affairs over the net. 1-300-85-1314. If you're quick, you might get in. We're going to talk with Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Good.
Well, what do you want to share with us?
I'm on Facebook.
Yep.
I have like an account on there, and I get an old friends on there. And then next minute, people like adding me for no reason why, and then I need to like find out. Could I? What is it? What's that word? I forgot that word now. am I on live or not?
Yeah, you're live, and so now people keep adding you to Facebook?
Yeah, people add me to Facebook, and I don't really want to talk to them.
Yep.
Because, like, certain people I want to talk to, certain people I don't really want to talk to them. And, like, every single time they will add me on the, on Facebook, and like on times they go away, leave me alone. They won't leave me alone. They like still try and add me, and I don't really want them to, like, not to.
Robert, what you're talking about there is you're actually talking about using the internet for stalking and bullying. And we're going to actually talk about that in a few weeks' time. So keep listening for a couple of weeks' time, because there's actually a conference on right as we speak now in Melbourne with a whole heap of professionals from around the world talking about that. So you listen in and ring back another night when we're actually talking about that, because that's going to be right on topic. Hey, thanks for your call, mate. Talking Life, and I'm Peter Janetsky, and with me is Carol Mizzo and Peter Brown, and it is 9:45. If you've got a story around internet being the dark side of the internet with the leaning up in affairs, we'd like to hear from you. But you've got to be quick and ring now, 1-300-85-1314, or text message 041-309-6509. Excuse me. Carol and Peter, I want to come back to Ellie talking about her friends, and you actually talked about early warning signs. What are some of the early warning signs that something is potentially wrong that people should pay heed to?
I think there are a number of early warning signs that can be picked up by partners and other members in the relationship. I think the whole change in sleep patterns, where people could suddenly begin to spend a lot of time on the internet after sleeping hours, the demand for more privacy, locked doors, the constant switching off, sudden switching off of computer when people come in, and having secret passwords. When family members begin to realize that there is a compulsion to go on the internet, and the neglect of other things in the relationship, other commitments, where energy has been invested,
Would mood change be around that too? Is that they have a different mood when they're actually...
Yes, the mood change because of the guilt and the secrecy that they have to keep. So on the one hand, they are engaging in something which they know has the potential to be destructive. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, mood change is certainly one of them. Change in terms of the intimacy within the relationship. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of early warning signs that people need to pick up and need to address in a consultative way.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that in a minute. Pete, you were nodding during that.
I agree with that list entirely. I can't think of too many others.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good list.
If we took the callers tonight who shared their stories, they were saying that it's like the other person shut them out.
Yep.
I think it was Katie who actually used the word being isolated. Mm. And so, therefore, just that whole thing, that intimate connecting is not happening at pretty any level. It becomes superficial.
Yeah, and the only other thing is sometimes you notice we have this, what we call the shrinking world phenomenon. People will purposely start to become less social, so they won't want to go. If you're going out, they won't want to go with you. They tend to be in contact with friends less, tend to be generally a bit more social. Now, that can be also indicates to things like depression and things like that. But that's, if it combined with some of those other things that Carol was talking about, I think that's sometimes a pretty good indication that at least there's something going wrong somewhere.
Yeah. Mm. So the isolation from social networks, as Peter said, is very important. Mm. You know, and when it gets to the level of a kind of sexual connection, then, of course, it can impact on the sexual relationship. Sometimes in very different ways. Sometimes it can be the demand for behaviors that are unusual in that relationship, trying to replicate what is being seen on the internet, and other times a kind of sexual anorexia, inability to interact with your partner.
What should someone do if they're picking up early warning signs? Let's talk about what can somebody do if they're sensing that their spouse or partner is actually shutting down and maybe they're going, something's not right here.
I think a lot depends on the pre-existing health of the relationship and the ability to communicate. So if that's in place, then I think the thing needs to be addressed. The couple need to talk about it. I think they need to share, the partner needs to share his or her concerns and highlight the specific behavior as opposed to blaming or punishing, shaming tactics, I think are counterproductive. I think there needs to be that ability to talk about it, perhaps to look at whether there can be a recommitment to the relationship. A lot depends on the level of
Peter, what are your thoughts?
Again, I agree with all of those things. I think they're really good. Like I think confronting things that you're concerned about in a relationship should become something that is par for the course. Yeah. Not in a paranoid way, not out of paranoia, and don't wait till it gets to that stage. Talk about, again, I think Carol said it, and talk about the behaviours that you're finding difficult to get your head around. The specific things that are bothering you about the way that people are behaving. I think that's the first place to start. And I think, people who are in committed relationships for a reasonable amount of time have pretty good radars. And they'll have you usually get a pretty good feel for whether somebody you know quite well is being honest with you or not.
Mm.
And if they're not, you really have to call them on that and call them on it early.
Yeah. The mantra that I often use with lots and lots of couples is I say, stop reacting and stop personalising.
That's right.
And I think that, we heard the couple of the callers, like Katie, who rang in about her story, going, well, what did I do wrong? And personalising is so natural and so automatic in our intimate relationships. But actually to not make it about me, first of all, allows us to go, I don't understand what's happening in these behaviours. And it creates a platform that becomes less reactive and you might have a better chance of actually confronting the right issues.
And not demonising or moralising. I think those things are very important. And to look at renegotiating some of the limits, and boundaries within the relationship. So that's the kind of first aid steps that can be taken. But obviously, if promises to change do not work, as so often that can happen, then I think people need to look at other steps of getting professional help to deal with it.
And let's talk about those other steps, because, Ellie was talking about her friends and stepping in. But I agree with you. It sounded like they actually needed more than that.
Mm, yeah.
And that there are a number of issues that we know that, you know, she was, by the description, is that if guys are unemployed, that can actually be a big impact in it. And
oh, yeah, and people who are, you know, people who are, have social anxiety or people who are becoming depressed, we know that, you know, men are more likely to get involved in risk-taking behaviours when their mood is not as good.
Mm.
For example, they're more likely to get involved with pornography or drinking or, you know, all sorts of different things. You know, so those things may be an indication of something else.
Mm.
But whatever it is, there's something going on. It's somebody you love and you need to step in there and get in early.
Now, let's talk about those steps. What are the steps that are going on beyond that from, you know, we've got this warm, we've had some conversation, it's not working, what are the steps? And I guess for some people, their first step would be want to go and talk to their pastor or their priest or whatever. And I want to say getting help from others is a good thing, but the key is that good help will know its limits and parameters. And that's the difference between someone trying to fix it and somebody going, this is what we can do, now you need to take some more steps.
That's right, yeah. And that's the risk, you know, with pastors, clergy, priests, is that, well, there are people who know their limits, there are others who don't.
Yeah.
You know, and get involved in the whole dynamics of it, begin to normalize certain things that they know nothing about, you know, and so, yes. I think,
and the same thing with relationships, as we talk about with kids and behaviour. You know, there's a number of things that are developmentally normal for kids at different ages, like throwing tantrums or lying or being afraid of the dark. But those things, just because they're age appropriate, doesn't mean they're acceptable. You know, and the same thing with relationships. There are things that are normal in relationships. It's normal for everybody to be stressed and snippy and short and a bit withdrawn when they've got three kids and both people are working and etc. But, you know, you need to do something to turn that around. And a lot of it is about effort. You know, I think advocating effort in the relationship in terms of being around each other, spending time with each other, redeveloping opportunities for intimacy is really important. If you're going to counselling and all you're getting is platitudes about changing behaviours, then that's not going to be enough. You know, this fake it till you make it thing
doesn't work.
Is just not going to work.
And I want to pick up one thing there about normalising. It's interesting that I love drawing on John Gottman's research, which is phenomenal research, and telling people that, you know, the research is that in marriage, about 70% of our conflict is perpetual. There's no solution for
it.
And I tell people, if you're actually experiencing conflict, it's not abnormal. It's actually normal. The key is actually learning to conflict smartly.
Right, yeah.
We'll come back to that study we've talked about a few times in the program before. I think it was probably about 6 years ago now. It came out of a uni in Texas where they looked at the amount of conflict in marriages that were good and the amount of conflict in marriages that weren't so flash and broke up. And they found that they were very similar, but the process of the conflict was very different.
It was very, very different.
So, I mean, conflict is, and, you know, you talk about people like Schnarch and guys like that, they will say that conflict is the very thing that helps you to grow personally in a relationship. You know, marriage, I think David Schnarch says marriage is a growing machine. You know, a lot of it is how you resolve that conflict, or you sit with the fact that you can't resolve the conflict. Mm. So a lot of this comes back down to the step before the internet, which is effort and personal growth in your relationship.
Yeah. Carol, you made a valid comment about counsellors as well, and I mean, I made the comment about crap counsel. And I was intrigued by ABC Four Corners on Monday night, where they actually showed a guy who is untrained therapist who is probably what I would call a psychotherapy cult. And so this raises the question, is that for you, Peter, as a psychologist, it's regulated and organised.
It's a state-regulated profession.
Yeah.
So you can't call yourself a psychologist, but, you know, my 16-year-old daughter could hang up a shingle as a counsellor.
Yeah, and this is, I know, Carol, you've been actually on involved in this for a long, long time at a national level, where we're actually been trying to get, how do we tell good counsellors from not so good? If somebody is getting the warning sign, something's not right, there's a dark side of the internet coming up, how do they actually find a good counsellor and the right sort of counsellor? Because, you know, you can go to somebody who may actually be a psychologist or, like myself, who's got a master's degree, and they may not be the right counsellor.
No. Yeah, I think they need to do their research. They need to do their homework. I think they need to get on reliable websites like the PACFA website in terms of counselors, or the APS website, and check out people from there. And also, I think that They have a right. Everybody has a right when they're making an appointment to ask the person, you know, what's your expertise in this area?
Yeah, how much work have you done in
that's
this?
Right.
This is what I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I just had an email from someone in Canberra who wanted to refer somebody, and they asked me that question.
Yeah.
You know, is this something that you can deal with? You know, what experience have you got? I think it's quite legitimate to ask that, and I'm amazed how few clients do that. And asking for people, you know, their professional qualification, their professional standing. No,
and
I
always,
think it's very important.
Yeah, yeah, and always be wary of people who use what I call recipe-based counselling, which is, you know, the same approach for every single problem. You know, if you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail type of an approach where you everybody goes through the same steps regardless of where you come from or what your age is or what your problems are.
Mm.
Yeah. And always it's quite okay to say, well, let's have an initial session.
Yep.
You know, I'll come and talk to you and see how it goes.
Yep.
You know, as opposed to committing yourself over long term.
One of the things that I say, and I've said lots on this program and I'm going to keep saying it, is that I would also ask, are they in supervision?
Yes.
Because
yeah.
I would not go and see a professional who does not have clinical supervision on a regular basis.
Mm. An ongoing commitment to training as well. Yeah. If you look at PACFA, the Organisation for Counselling, you look at the APS, the Australian Psychological Association, both of those require people to do continuing education and to be accountable for it. So that's another thing to look for.
And you cannot be a clinical member of Queen's and Counsellors Association or registered with PACFA unless you are under supervision.
Yeah.
And that's regularly monitored.
Yeah. You know? In the last minute, what would be your closing comment you want to leave with people tonight about the whole thing we're talking about, affairs of the net?
Well, I would want to say that it is something that, as we've said repeatedly, we need to look at the dark side. It's very easy to get caught up in all the benefits of the internet, but we need to be aware of the dark side. We need to be vigilant about that without necessarily being, getting paranoid about it, and especially in relationships, that it has the potential to be quite destructive. And the earlier you can seek help, the better the prognosis, because people are ending, as we have heard today, relationships are ending, being destroyed, and there are divorces. Article today says that 30 to 40% of divorces, the internet is contributing to that. Mm. So that's my warning to people.
Yeah.
I guess what I'd say is, you know, one of the fantastic things about the internet is the freedom that it provides and the ease with which it allows people to do things. But obviously, again, with freedom comes great responsibility. I don't like that expression, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people. But if you stretch it a little bit further, you know, okay, having a gun doesn't mean you're going to kill somebody, but you're much more likely to get into strife if you've got one. And I think the thing with the internet is you need to use it, but you need to use it warily and cautiously, and always be aware of the fact that, you know, just like everyone else, you can get caught up in things. And that personal growth and having people close to you, you can talk about with how things are going, your relationship, your life. Having good friends or having people who can mentor you is a good thing as well. But you know, the internet is a wonderful tool, but you've got to use it responsibly and you've got to be very careful.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time tonight. I really appreciated that. And I want to say thank you for those people who shared the stories too, because that was what I think speaks louder than what we can say.
Yeah, way more.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks,
appreciate
it.
This is Talking Life, and we're on Families Number One 96.5 in Brisbane and around the world via the internet at 96five.com. And tonight we've been talking about affairs of the net impacts your marriage or relationship. And my guests have been Carol Mizzo and Peter Brown. Peter Brown's a clinical psychologist and Carol is a counsellor and an educator. And both work at Foundations Counselling Centre over at Castledine. And follow-up of the program can be found tonight. So there'll be a podcast tomorrow evening from the webpage. Go check it out. You'll be able to get a whole heap of information there. If you've got a suggestion for a topic of a program, send us an email, peter@peterj.com.au. Answering the telephones tonight has been Kelly McKenzie. I've been your host. I'm Peter Janetsky. I'm a counsellor and educator, and I'll talk with you next week on Talking Life.
Talking Life with Peter Janetsky.